Hey y'all, how's it going? I'm Scott. Welcome to my show. This is the Scott Horton Show. My phone is on mute, so people can go ahead and text me if they want without the damn thing dinging. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show, where I oppose the new Iraq war more. Today on the show, me opposing the Iraq war for 3 hours? I sent out a lot of invites. But I did kind of wait till the last minute to send out a lot of invites. I guess we'll see how it goes. Take a chance on the sheer number of emails I sent out this morning. Uh-oh, I gotta sneeze. Hang on 1 second. Stay right there. I'll be right back. Oh no, don't go away. Oh man. Oh man, I thought it was going to be one of those sneezes that kind of settles back down again. And it's kind of in there somewhere. You ever have that happen? About to sneeze and never does come. Gotta wait till tomorrow or something. Man. Alright, well, anyway. Based on the sheer quantity of invites I sent out this morning, I think we'll probably get somebody on to talk about something. Wouldn't that be cool? You know, I should have called Ray McGovern. I bet he's back. I never really got to have a long enough conversation with him when he was in Russia. You know what? Let me write that down. I'll try to remember at the break. Hey, chat room guys, remind me at the break. You know how I am about remembering things. Yeah. Let's see if I can call Ray and get him on. Otherwise, I got a ton of news. Now, you know, I got to start today with the cops, with the U.S. government occupation of the United States. And these are the local cops in Galveston, Texas. Galveston, Connecticut? CN is Connecticut, right? Is there a Galveston in Connecticut? Huh. Wait a minute. Let me go to the source here. Guess it doesn't say any better than that here. All right. Well, this is at the Liberty Crier. LibertyCrier.com. C-R-I-E-R. LibertyCrier.com. Parents say four cops beat their 12-year-old girl. Left her in the hospital. Now, all the police involved in this are guilty. Guilty. Until someone... post-conviction, you know, at appeal, can prove their innocence beyond a shadow of a doubt. They are guilty. Four plainclothes Galveston police officers beat a 12-year-old girl in the head in her own yard, beat her with a flashlight, accused her of being a prostitute, and threatened to shoot her puppy. Puppy. While responding to a call about prostitutes, the girl's parents claim, in federal court. The girl, an honor student who was dressed in gym shorts and a t-shirt when the cops beat her, is black. The girl's mom sent her outside to flip the switch on the breaker box because the house had lost power. She was doing that when four plainclothes cops emerged from an unmarked car and ran toward the girl. One cop said, "You're a prostitute. You're coming with me," the complaint states. The defendant officers are Justin Popovich, Sean Stewart, David Rourke, and Sergeant Gilbert Gomez. They are guilty. They are guilty. The terrified girl grabbed onto a tree and shouted, "Daddy, Daddy." The parents ran outside and saw their daughter, quote, hysterical and holding onto the tree. With one arm, two officers were striking the girl's head, face, and throat, the complaint states. The officer who was holding the plaintiff covered her mouth. The officer was ultimately identified as David Rourke, who was guilty. The complaint continues. The officers stated that they had received a call reporting three prostitutes in the neighborhood and that drug dealing was, quote, going down. The officer hit the plaintiff in the back of the head with a flashlight, hit her neck, throat, slapped her across the face, told her to get off the tree. The girl's trying to climb up the tree, desperately trying to save her own life. The family's five-month-old puppy grabbed the officer's leg. The officer threatened if they did not grab the dog, he would shoot it. It was ultimately learned that the dispatch call the officers were responding to reported three white females soliciting one white male and one black male drug dealers. The call was for three white females. The girl required medical attention for head, back, and throat pain, a sprained wrist, contusions and abrasions, black eyes, double vision, loss of hearing, nausea and vomiting, blood in her ear, blood from her nose. She has since had behavioral problems, nightmares, post-traumatic stress disorder. 3 weeks later, she was arrested at school for allegedly assaulting a public servant. I don't know who wrote this or how, but a government school overlord. The complaint does not state explicitly that the girl was arrested for allegedly assaulting the cops who beat her, or for some other alleged incident. The family had to hire an attorney. This is poorly written, but she was arrested. It doesn't say in the complaint, but she was arrested for allegedly assaulting the cops who beat her. They put her in cuffs and took her away after all of that. We don't know at what point she finally got to the hospital. The family had to hire an attorney. A mistrial was declared on day one of her trial. They put her on trial. They put her on trial. The judge declared a mistrial. They don't say exactly why. The family is now suing in federal court. How do you like that? That's your security force. Those are your protectors. They get a phone call about three white female prostitutes. A 12-year-old black girl goes outside in her own yard. And they savagely beat her. I mean, how hard did they have to hit her in the head with a flashlight and their fists to give her two black eyes, double vision, loss of hearing, nausea, and vomiting? She had a concussion. They beat the crap out of her and called her a whore. And now she's a wreck. And it's at libertycrier.com. I say the allegations in her lawyer's lawsuit that he's written up here prove 100% that all four of these cops are absolutely guilty and ought to be buried under death row in Huntsville. Oh, I forgot. It's not a crime for a government employee to do anything they want to anyone they want. If these four cops had gang raped her to death, they would still be on the force. They'd be on 2 weeks paid vacation. Oh, if they die, you're doing it wrong. 2 weeks paid vacation for you. Cops can do anything they want. That's why they do these things, because they know that they can. And you know, I can understand being some thug, steroid pumping meathead cop and having a lot of fun beating the crap out of bad guys. But is there no line anymore? Now, bad guys is anyone. Including could be your sister, your daughter, Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics, no chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com.
All right, guys. Eric Garrison, the instant messenger here, just this stupid CNN woman talking about how we attacked Al-Qaeda in Iraq in 2001 and then drove them back to Syria and Pakistan. What? Huh? And then he says, and Rick Francona, he's one of the CNN kooks, he responded as if what she said made sense. Went ahead and rolled with it. Yeah, these are the people who are bringing you the news. They don't know the first thing about it. Not even the very first thing. All right. Well, anyway. Coming up on the show, me. Right now, a couple of orders of business to take care of here. The first thing is that I did a thing last night at liberty.me. It was a, what do they call it, a seminar or a class or a talk or a something. And it was myself and Angela Keaton. And basically it was her interviewing me. And we talked about the old days. And we talked about what we're doing here and the evil wars. And, you know, I said most of what I say on this show every day about, you know, how Iraq became the mess that it is. And, you know, why we shouldn't do, the USA should not do anything about it, et cetera, like that. But, you know, anyway, it was pretty cool. So thanks for, thanks to Jeff Tucker, who had me on his show last week. If you want to watch that, that's on there too, at liberty.me. If you're not a member, you got to sign up. Just go to my website, scotthorton.org, and look for the logo on the right side there, or just use the promo code Scott. And you'll save, what, a third off. It's $14, but you get it for $9, I think. You get $5 off the $14 a month thing for life. You get one third off the price from now on if you sign up by way of my promo code or the link on the in the right margin of my website. And then you can watch that. Oh, and it's video. So it's like watching this show, only with video. And of course, the lovely Angela Keaton asking the questions. Probably want to look at her more than me, but that's all right. So yeah, check that out. It's at liberty.me. And then also, you just heard, if you were listening, I hope you're listening, at that last break, that was the first run of my newest ad. It's Whole Food Multi-Complete Vitamins. And now here's the thing about it. I got to admit to you, I've got kind of a thing about alternative health things. I kind of don't like that stuff. Just because I don't know anything about it, and I don't want to represent like I know things about things I don't really know about. And I'm always healthy. And so I'm not really interested in working that hard on staying healthy, because it's always come easy for me just because I'm lucky. I'm not mocking the universe, okay? I'm just explaining, knocking on wood here. I've just been very lucky, and it's just, it hasn't really been a thing of mine. And I don't like the way a lot of, you know, alternative medical this or that or any of any description make claims about what's supposed to happen when you give them money. I'm not really into that. But I don't see a problem here at all. I think this is just fine. It's the guy that owns it, I talked with him. He's a decent guy. I went trolling entirely through his website, all the questions and answers and all the, you know, marketing language and everything. There are no magical claims here. It's just good damn vitamins is what it is. He doesn't promise to cure your cancer or whatever, whatever, whatever. Like the kinds of things that would turn me and you off. It's, but it's all whole food, ingredients. It's not, you know, synthesized chemical vitamins that you just eat and pee out later kind of thing. High absorption rates and all that kind of deal. And so go check it out. It's WholeFoodMultiComplete.com is the website. And they got a whole questions and answers section and a comment, a contact section too. If you have more questions that demand answers, you can get a hold of them there. And it seems to me like a good company. And they said they're sending me some to try out. So I'm going to start eating them and see if all of a sudden I feel healthier and stronger and more vibrant. And my pee is bright yellow and all the rest. I'll tell you. But yeah, it seems like perfectly legit, good stuff. Oh, and it has nothing to do with any kind of, you know, multi-level marketing crap where you buy a bottle of vitamins, but really he's trying to hire you to sell them for him or some kind of crap like that. I swear to God, it has nothing to do with that. And it's not a giant evil corporation. It's a small company and they do, good stuff here. It seems to me, like a good deal. So check them out. Oh, cool. Peter Van Buren is calling me. I'll take this call in here. Well, hi, Peter. You're live on the radio show right now.
Scott, it's a pleasure to be back with you, though. Unfortunately, we're talking about Iraq again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really too bad. Well, we got about 3 minutes to get into it here before the bottom of the hour break, but that's good enough timing for me. I was just about done saying what I was saying anyway. So, let's talk first. Is it okay with you? And maybe we can just kind of give this short shrift before the break here. We'll have to get back to it after the break too. But can you talk a little bit about the authority of the president to launch the war the way he's launched it and the various and sundry excuses that have been raised for his pretended authority, or I don't know, maybe legit if you think so, authority here?
No, I don't. Legally, the president is citing the 2002 congressional authorization to George Bush to invade Iraq. I mean, this is roughly the equivalent that the president is citing, you know, like the Munich Accords or the Articles of Confederation as his justification. You know, the idea that a decision Congress made, 12 years ago to a different president for a specific invasion to disable Saddam's WMDs, that somehow is okay still, is really just political cover. Obama is basically saying to Congress, all right, I'm going to stick my neck out on this, and if you guys don't want to join in, that's fine. I'll just cite this old thing, and you'll go along with it. If you want to chime in this year and say that what I'm doing is okay for your own benefit, sure, go ahead and do that too. But it's really just political cover. It's an excuse, if you will, at the very best.
Yeah, and now, this whole thing about the War Powers Act, it just, for some reason, it goes without saying, everybody seems to just quote-unquote know that the president could start a war for 60 days. And I guess, even though that's exactly what the War Powers Act does not say, they dropped that excuse, right? That's when you say they're invoking the AUMF from 02 now, that's because everybody already, you know, got over their excuse about the War Powers Act.
You know, the War Powers Act, I'm afraid to say, has not been followed by any president ever. You know, it was passed in the wake of the Vietnam War, and it really just has never really caught any traction. It was, again, a kind of a political dodge by Congress.
It was they overrode Nixon's veto to pass it, but then never enforced it. It's only enforceable by impeachment, so,
yep.
You know. It's useless.
Get around
basically.
To that.
All right, now hold it right there. It's Peter Van Buren. He's formerly with the State Department, author of We Meant Well, and that's his blog too, and we'll be right back in just a sec, y'all. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Now, Peter Van Buren, he used to work in the State Department. He writes at TomDispatch.com all the time, and I think Huffington, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. all over the place.
Reuters, and Salon, Mother Jones, on the side of walls, any place I can find.
Hell yeah, good times. And lots of good stuff, too. And what's the Tom Joad book? I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me, Peter. I should have pulled it up.
No worries. It's my current book. It's called The Ghosts of Tom Joad, A Story of the 99%, and it's about our economy and obviously some of the things that Occupy has been talking about.
Right. Okay, cool. And then before that, it's We Meant Well, about your time working for the State Department based in southern Iraq there, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And that was a lot of my background on Iraq was going there for a full year as a State Department diplomat, leading two teams in the failure of the last war there. And that gives me a little perspective on the current war. And when I say the current war is doomed to fail as the other one did, I think I say that with a little expertise.
All right, well, you know, I have my whole kind of stock list of most outrageous things to talk about, but I'm kind of interested in what you think are the most important things that people are overlooking, because, after all, you must be watching the same TV news as me and pulling what little hair you have out. Same
well,
as
thanks,
me.
Thanks for the hair joke, Scott.
Oh, hey, I got my own problems.
But, you know, you're right. Some days I really have to turn away from the news for a little while and stare out the window, because you can't get away from the idea that this is just the hole being dug deeper, the hole that we thought we were out of. You know, we left the Iraq war 3 years ago, not quite 3 years ago, with a terrible, unsettled situation that we had created over the course of 9 years of war. Iraq had dissolved into a series of statelets run by the Shias, the Sunnis, the Kurds, and all sorts of variations therein. Violence was endemic. The Iranians were the most powerful outside power there. Even the oil wasn't flowing, ostensibly one of the justifications for the war. And America's influence was zero, especially compared to the expenditure of 4,600 American lives, 32,000 American wounded, close to 200,000 Iraqis dead, $2 trillion. I mean, you do the math, how it adds up. And then we elected a president in good part based on his statement that he was going to end that war, that he was opposed to that war, that he thought it was a stupid war. Now, a couple of years later, we're back. And Iraq is still three divided statelets or more. The Iranians are still the most influential force on the ground. The Americans still have little influence except what we can buy temporarily. Even the oil isn't flowing anymore. And yet we're going back in. We are back in. We're basing aircraft in Erbil. We've got an admitted 1,600 troops on the ground, never mind how many contractors, mercenaries, covert operators, CIA, whatever else you want, Legion of Doom members, whoever else is out there. And we're investing, again, money and time and weapons and lives into a mistake. You know, even Vietnam, the most obvious touch point in history, when we finally admitted that was a mistake and left, we didn't go back. And that makes the Iraq debacle even sadder for me, if you will.
Yeah. Well, now they're selling Vietnam weapons, for crying out loud. Same commie regime, but not so bad. If you want to be our trading partner, if that's what they call it.
You know, I mean, the weapons thing is perhaps one of the real tragedies here, because most of the airstrikes that the United States has been carrying out for the last 6 weeks have been to blow up our own weapons that we left behind for the Iraqi army to abandon. Many of the man-portable air-to-air or ground-to-air missiles that threaten American aircraft somehow made their way from Libya, where we unleashed chaos, into the battlefields of Iraq and Syria. And America's response to all this is, let's throw some more weapons into the mix, because we'll control everything this time. You know, there's that definition of mental illness that says you repeat the same process over and over, hoping for different results, and you're left wondering truly who is sane in this process here in the United States.
Yeah. Well, all right, so the Kagans, well, two of the four Kagans or whatever.
Oh, I'm sorry, I just threw up a little in my mouth when you mentioned
them.
Know.
All right, well, hold still, because here it's going to get worse. Now, they admit that they have no credible narrative to sell you about how this might work. I mean, that's the premise of their entire recommendation to send 25,000 troops. But one of the major premises of their argument is that the tribes may want to, the Sunni tribes that are actually occupied by ISIS right now, that they may want to overthrow these guys, but they just can't. That unlike the situation in 2006 and 2007, ISIS is really in a much stronger position. They're holding tribal leaders hostage and Baathist leaders hostage. They have learned their lesson of the stab in the back from the tribes of the Awakening Movement of 2007. And right now, basically, the Sunnis in general, according to the Kagans, the so-called Sunni triangle, northwestern Iraq, Fallujah, and then up north to Mosul, etc., that they just don't have the ability to throw these guys off. So whoever it is, if it's not the Iraqi army or the Iranians or the Turks, it's going to have to be the Marines, because it's the only way anybody is going to be able to dislodge these guys from Mosul. The local population can't do it without our help, the Kagans say, Peter.
Well, first, for your listeners who haven't lost their lunch yet, you know, the Kagans are a husband and wife team who never find a war they can't support. And they were two of the most vocal proponents of the Iraq war in 2003, cheerleaders for the surge in 2007, and critics of the United States for withdrawing, retreating, if you will, in 2011. So, you know, calling them back in for some thoughtful commentary is really quite hilarious in a sense. You know, the Kagan's theory is as wrong now as it was in the past. Look, 2007, during the surge, the whole plan was to use American military power to create political space that would allow the Sunnis to disengage from al-Qaeda. They were the boogeymen of the time. And then reunite with the Shia government, who was going to accept them as brothers. And this plan failed. I was there for the failure in 2009. I was tasked with talking to the Sunni leaders in hopes of cajoling, threatening, bribing, and begging them to stick with the plan just a little bit longer in hopes that things would turn around. I heard them express their concerns. I heard them talk about being cheated, double-crossed, and I just don't see that the same plan that failed with 160,000 troops in 2007 to 2009 has any chance of succeeding now with a tenth or a hundredth of those number of troops, with Sunnis who have already been burnt once. Look, there's a reason why the indigenous Sunnis in Iraq support groups like ISIS. They need protection. It's like gangs in prison. You don't necessarily want to join the gang, but if you don't join the gang, then you're prey for the others. The Sunnis have been beaten and imprisoned and prosecuted and persecuted and executed by the Shia government consistently since the American invasion, and they are not about to simply step away because the Americans have promised, well, this time, you know, we're going to stick with it until it works.
Right. All right, it's Peter Van Buren, formerly with the State Department, and now a peacenik and a writer. You can find him all over the place, and I'm going to pull up all of his websites during this break, and then that way I can say them all right for you. But he's easy enough to search. You can read him at tomdispatch.com, that's for sure. We'll be right back in just a sec. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. darrenscoffee.com. That is such a weird place to start that song. I got to talk with Ian about that. I don't know. What the hell do I know about music? Maybe that's the best place to start it, but I'm not confident of that. All right, listen, I completely screwed up. That whole story about how much I hate cops because of what they did to that little girl earlier is about, say, 6 years old now. And somebody in the chat room was screaming at me and trying to get me to pay attention and tell me that at the time, but I wasn't looking at the chat room. And so, anyway, they're still all evil and guilty, and you should blame all cops for what those four cops did. And I don't care how long ago it was, and how do you like that? All right, good. That's how I feel about it, too. Okay, and now back to our interview with Peter Van Buren. For 24 years, he worked at the State Department. He wrote the book, We Meant Well, How I Helped Lose the Battle for the Hearts and Minds of the Iraqi People. And, of course, you know, because he was a whistleblower, the government retaliated against him, and there's a whole story of his you know, persecution at the hands of the state for telling the truth, just like everybody else, right? Here he is. He's at Huffington. He's at dissenter.firedoglake.com, at The Nation, and at Tom Dispatch. And, of course, he's written for antiwar.com and The American Conservative and all over the freaking place. So his website is wementwell.com, wementwell.com. And now, so when we left off at the break there, talking about, well, the surge already didn't work, so how is it supposed to work again? And so, okay, I'll buy that. It seems to me like because not just the overthrow of Saddam or even the de-Bothification and abolition of the Iraqi army and state as it previously existed, but because America stayed all the way through 2007, that was what made it an irreconcilable problem, because in staying, the Army and the Marines ended up simply serving the will of the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq and the Dawah Party, who are both sock puppets of the Iranians, and their plan was to use the Americans to steal Baghdad for them and kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad. And then, as they talked about for years, and this is why Muqtada al-Sadr, you know, always fought with Abdulaziz al-Hakim from the Supreme Islamic Council within the Shiite United Iraqi Alliance, was he wanted Arab nationalism and to hold Iraq together in alliance with the Sunnis and kick the Americans and the Iranians out. And the Iranian stooges wanted to use the Americans to kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad and then kick the Americans out. And then they would have what they called back then strong federalism, meaning the Sunnis can go dig their own oil well somewhere. They're not getting any Basra oil money ever again, basically. That's, you know, a big part of what's going on here. They don't want to rule Fallujah and Mosul and Tikrit. They know that they can't. And that's what happened with the sectarian cleansing, was kick all the Sunnis out, put them on that side of the line, and then let them declare independence. I mean, what did Maliki even try to do about it other than just launch artillery at Fallujah for a few months back in January and February, right? You know, he wasn't even trying. That's why they turned and fled when ISIS came to Mosul. So in other words, I guess what I'm trying to get to is, it seems to me like the lines were already drawn. Maybe the battle for Kirkuk still is awaiting, but otherwise, on the Iraqi side of this thing, it seems like Sunnistan has declared independence, whether under ISIS or whether anybody else. They'll never be part of Iraq and under the authority of the Baghdad government ever again. That ship, like you said, had sailed back in 2007 when it didn't work then.
And thus, I guess what I'm hearing from you, Scott, is, you know, the war worked out just the way it was supposed to, and our work here is done.
Yeah, just the way it was supposed to if you're the Ayatollah Khomeini.
Well, you know, I think we need to broaden our perspective here. But you know, all joking aside, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. The United States has been at war in one form or another with Iraq since 1991. What is that? 23 years.
Right.
And our, so far, if you'll total it all up, our accomplishment is the dissolution of the nation state. And as you said, the Sunnis are on their own. The Kurds have de facto been on their own and clearly have been very clever about pushing the United States towards more and more independence through this current process. They're fighting independently of whatever Iraqi army is left. The Iranians have been empowered and lost one of their most significant enemies on their western border, you know, Saddam's Iraq, and replaced it with essentially a client state of Shias. The oil has not flowed, and chaos has been unleashed all over the Middle East as the United States essentially dissolved the Cold War status of the Middle East that Saddam somehow held together. Now, there's a lot of toothpaste been squeezed out of the tube in the course of all that. And the thought that first, anything can put it all back together, and second, more specifically, that some kind of goofy air campaign with a pasted together faux coalition and some, you know, reminding of the Sunnis how useful it would be if they would just simply, you know, get back together with the Shias, you know, it's just beyond what we could expect to call reality at this point. I truly don't know what the president was thinking. The Bush-Cheney people, for all their evil, sort of had a goal in mind, at least initially, which was to conquer and remake the Middle East in America's desired image. It was an evil, stupid goal, but apparently was some kind of strategy and plan. Obama's reinsertion of the United States into Iraq doesn't appear to even have that kind of evil genius working for it. It seems to be sort of somewhere kind of a mix between weariness, desperation, short-term political expediency. You know, he wants to look tough with the congressional midterms coming up. And almost a sense of I don't want to say boredom, but a sense of, you know, he's just tired of listening to people and pushing back and fighting with Congress. And he's just kind of thrown up his hands and said, you know, fudge this. If you guys want a war, go have a war.
Yeah. That is how it seems, huh?
Now, in case you're not sure, those are all really bad reasons to have a war.
Right, yeah, of course.
Just checking in on that.
Well, now, so what about this? What about the hawks who are still after Assad? Did you see McCain and Dempsey this morning in the Senate on TV where McCain is saying to Dempsey, oh, yeah, well, so what if Assad keeps attacking the Free Syrian Army? You're going to help them against ISIS, but you're not going to help them against Assad? And Dempsey's going, no, yeah, we'll help them against Assad, too. I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, well, I guess we'll see what happens. What?
Yeah, I think that the most practical thing at this point would be to issue Lindsey Graham a rifle, a helmet, and some body armor and get him out front on the ground on these issues. And he can take McCain and some of these other chicken hawks with him. You've just really kind of explained how there is no goal, there is no strategy, there is no real plan. You've got parts of the American government barking about more and more. You've got a few, Rand Paul has kind of noodled around the edges of saying it's already too much. And you've got our military people kind of befuddled in the middle, if you will, not really sure what their mission is, not really sure what resources they have, and not really sure what they're sort of fighting toward, if you will. This is something that beleaguered the invasion and occupation as well. The military is not the answer to every problem. It's arguably not even the answer to many problems. When you do need to use it, and I'm certainly not claiming that here, but when you do need to use it, it's a very blunt instrument. It's designed to destroy and break things and kill people. And you really, really need to know why you're doing that, and you really, really need to understand that that's about all you can realistically expect from the military. When instead you expect them to be peacemakers, deal makers, diplomats, coordinators, advisors, trainers, and lions and tigers and bears, it's not going to work. The military just isn't that kind of a machine. And I think Dempsey's stumbling to say something coherent to an incoherent question maybe is just a kind of a reflection of that.
Mm. All right. And now, so I guess I should just start asking everybody this. I got a $10 bet with Gareth Porter that they're going to send in the Marines before New Year's. I really think before... Oh, man. Well, so you think they're going to send in more troops?
Scott, I'm going to have to wrap up this interview, but I will wrap it up by saying, yes, of course, we're going to be sending in more troops. They're already on their way or there if they haven't been. And, man, are you going to lose that bet with Gareth?
No, I'm going to win it. He's going to
lose. Oh, you're going to win that bet. All right, in that case, you're buying.
All right, see ya. Hey, thanks very much, Peter. Peter Van Buren, everybody. WeMeantWell.com. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And so I mentioned there in that discussion with Peter Van Buren about the Senate hearing today, where Secretary Hagel admitted that U.S. military advisors could accompany Iraqi forces in attacks against Islamic State militants. Delta Force or... I guess Rangers, leading Iraqi forces into battle. And they're going to what? Take Mosul? I don't believe it. I don't even think the Iraqi army is going to try. I think the Rangers are going to look behind them and be like, come on, guys. Why are you marching so slow? I don't know, man. U.S. military advisors could accompany Iraqi forces in attacks against Islamic State militants, top U.S. General Martin Dempsey has said. This is from the BBC. Hundreds more U.S. advisors are being sent to Iraq as part of a new strategy to defeat the group outlined by President Barack Obama last week. The U.S. earlier carried out its first airstrike under the strategy, which seeks to degrade and destroy the Islamic State. The jihadists have seized huge areas of Syria and Iraq and declared a caliphate. General Dempsey confirmed that U.S. military advisors would help the Iraqi army to plan attacks against IS. Quote, to be clear, if we reach the point where I believe our advisors should accompany Iraqi troops on attacks against specific Islamic State targets, I will recommend that to the president, he said. General Dempsey was testifying alongside Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel at the Senate Armed Services Committee. We are at war with ISIL as we are at war with Al-Qaeda, Mr. Hagel said. Not that he proved that either of those things are true. He outlined in more detail that the U.S. strategy for... He outlined in more detail the U.S. strategy for dealing with the group. Quote, this plan includes targeted actions against ISIL safe havens in Syria, including its command and control, logistics capabilities, and infrastructure, he said. Well, that can only mean civilian infrastructure, of course. What, like they have a giant military headquarters full of all their top guys? Both men were heckled by heroic anti-war protesters inside the chamber, including Medea Benjamin, and it was the Code Pink people who were there who interrupted. Meanwhile, Iraq's new prime minister saw his two nominations for defense and interior minister rejected by the parliament. The rejections of the two key posts are a setback. So, man, I want to know more about that. Did I already know? Oh, yeah. Well, his last interior minister that he proposed but then was rejected was the former head of the Badr Brigade. Anyway... Haider al-Abadi, he's no different than Jafari al-Maliki. He's a Dawa Party guy. He serves the Ayatollah in Iran. That's how that works. Yeah, I just sent an email to Rick at the bumper sticker this morning. I said, hey, Rick, you need to put all the Iraq stickers back up. Like, Iraq, America's West Bank. He says, done. I don't know if he means just that one sticker or he went through and put everything about Iraq back up already or what. I don't know. Got a lot of old propaganda to scrape back together from before. Just copy-paste, change the year. Oh, man. All right, well. So, U.S. launches airstrikes in expanded ISIS fight. The way it's being explained by the government is that this is the new start of the next stage of the war where, okay, we're not just protecting Erbil or pretending to protect Yazidis on Mount Sinjar. No, now we're just going after ISIS targets. And they hit some south of Baghdad. If you look at a sectarian map of Iraq, as drawn by George W. Bush, you will see that there are many Sunni Arabs that live in some neighborhoods still in Baghdad, mostly in the southwest. And they live southwest of there, too. Well, and even south. They sort of, the Sunni population still kind of rings Baghdad. And so ISIS has sway in virtually all the predominantly Sunni parts of the country, if not complete dominance. So anyway, it's no surprise to find out that there are Islamic State fighter, you know, targets south of Baghdad, or that the U.S. is bombing them now. But there you go. And in fact, I'm sorry, that was CBS, but Nancy Youssef at McClatchy Newspapers is 1,000% guaranteed to have better coverage of the same thing at McClatchyDC.com. And then, this is very important. Muqtada al-Sadr threatens to target American troops if they return to Iraq. This is... back in history, he was the one Shia leader who wanted to work things out with the Sunni nationalists and hold Iraq together in a coalition government that would oppose Iran and America. So the Americans chased him into Iran and fought instead for the guys who worked directly for Iran and who wanted to carry out Iran's policy, wanted to carry out their policy of taking Baghdad and keeping it, kicking all the Sunnis out of it, and breaking the country into three, which is what's happening right now. And Muqtada al-Sadr, he's always been part of the United Iraqi Alliance with the Dawa Party and the Supreme Islamic Council. But he's always been, he's mostly been an Iraqi nationalist. And he sure as hell is against the Americans. And you know, did you guys hear my interview with Matthew Ho on the Sunday morning show on KPFK, anti-war radio on KPFK? The archive is there at scotthorton.org/interviews. And man, he talked about, we had this big long conversation after the interview was over. I'm going to keep interviewing that guy for, you know, I should probably get him on the show right now. What the hell? He's got a lot of things to say about Iraq and Afghanistan. And one of the things he talked about was, in working with, I guess, his first tour in Iraq with the Marines, he knew of Muqtada al-Sadr himself coming to the Americans and asking for a meeting. He just wanted to talk with them about a couple of things, and they just completely blew him off and treat him like crap, which, you know, is another anecdote, basically, that confirms what we've already heard, right? Was the Paul Bremer had turned to the young daughter of a Republican donor that was his aide over there and said, who's this Muqtada al-Sadr guy? And she says, oh, he's just some minor cleric. Don't worry about it. So they didn't think they needed to listen to him or take him seriously or take his concerns seriously. And you know what Matthew Ho said his concerns were? And you know what? All I need is my one source. I just know this is true when I heard it. I just knew he's telling the truth about this. When widely acclaimed and loved Shiite dies, everybody hangs out a black flag in mourning Well, so a lot of people been getting killed. Highly revered people in the Shiite community. They're religious leaders. They're being killed. And so they put out their black flags. And the American GIs, not knowing what they were, took them as a threat and started taking them down. Muqtada al-Sadr just wanted to explain that, like, hey, man, this is really important to us. And you're stepping on toes where you don't need to. And so, like, a little bit of helpful advice, if you guys would leave our black flags alone. You know, just 1 million little things like that. And then finally, really, they turned against him full scale in the spring of 04, of course, and made him a permanent enemy. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. And yeah, man, you know, I should stop telling everybody about that bet I made with Gareth Porter because I think my worst version of it is going to come true. I think it's going to be before Halloween even. Never mind Thanksgiving or New Year's. Like I told you, I switched back to Fox News. Just go ahead and give it to me straight from the Pentagon. Just blam me right in the eye. Come on. Bring them on. And what they've got to say is the consensus is, look, the president said they're a threat. And if they're a threat, then we got to send in the Marines. What the hell are we waiting for? And that argument is going to win the day. And you know what? Even if the American people are against it, that doesn't mean a thing. And the American people aren't against it because TV said, well, I don't know. No, I guess they say they're against ground troops. But they're for the war, and that's what you get. You don't get to just send your Air Force. You know, back to what we were talking about with Peter Van Buren there. The strategy can't work. Everyone knows it. They're going to replicate the surge that already failed. Only this time without the troops or the zillions of dollars. Really? And they're going to enlist who? The Shiite militias to drive ISIS out? The Shiite militias like Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army that he just declared for the second time in a week that he will direct against American troops the moment they put their foot anywhere near where he can get to them? That guy is, he's going to go and sack Mosul for us, is that right? Or we're going to send the Badr Brigade, a.k.a. the Iraqi army that just turned and fled. 30,000 men turned and fled from 3,000 or something like that, right? That one's going in the world record history books right there. Yeah. It can't work. Everybody recognizes it. You know, people were saying things like, well, you know, the Syrian part of the strategy, now that just doesn't make any sense. We're going to back the moderates who aren't moderate and have no power, and they're going to fight al-Nusra, ISIS, and Assad all at the same time? And, huh? And that doesn't really seem to sound very right or anything, does it? And, but, you know, the Iraq thing, yeah, that, no, that makes more sense. No, it doesn't. You know, I don't know everything about it, but I don't see any reason to believe. Let me put it that way. I don't see any reason to believe that the Kurdish Peshmerga could sack Mosul and drive ISIS out of Mosul, city of 2 million people. They're just going to march right in there? The Kurdish Peshmerga? Let's say Barack Obama uses his magical powers of persuasion that work so well on Democratic voters in America, and he somehow convinces the Kurdish Peshmerga, the PKK commies, they're Kurds too. The Shiite militias, the Badr Brigade, the Mahdi army, Assad, is that how you say it? Assad al-Haq? Something al-Haq, whatever the crap al-Haq. And the Iraqi army, which is really the Badr Brigade, only dressed up in American fatigues and with more American weapons. And they all go and march on Mosul. You think they could take it? Tikrit, I believe, is quite a bit smaller town than that. How about Bakuba? I don't think that they could take any of these cities back from the Islamic State. I think probably the local Sunnis would take arms against them. Because if they have a choice only in this situation of ISIS or Baghdad, they choose ISIS. Because Baghdad is run by Tehran. It can't work. The Iraq strategy makes no more sense than the Syria strategy does. And more people are coming around to that. How is this supposed to work? And then the next quote-unquote logical step from there is we just drop American GIs out of planes, right? Just send in the airborne, send in the 3rd Infantry Division, send in the Marine Corps, build some bases, fly some planes, launch some missions. And you know what? I know that I'm kind of wrong, because this is exactly what I said about Libya in 2011, that once you overthrow Gaddafi and the first suicide attacks start, then blam, full-scale occupation again. It'll be just like Iraq, only in Libya. How can they resist? What, are they going to let Libya just be lawless jihadi stand and do nothing about it? And the answer is I'm right, but boy, was I just way too far ahead of the game. It's only now in 2014, 3 years later, that Jason Ditz reports Obama's mobilization could have sights on failed state Libya. Obama talked up vigilance in northern Africa. President Obama's announcement of a major new expansion of the ISIS war into Syria came along with talk of an increased commitment nationwide, and he explicitly mentioned the need for vigilance in northern Africa. That suggests the administration has set its sights squarely on the increasingly failed state of Libya, which grows more failed by the day, and where General Khalifa Haftar, long funded by the CIA, is aiming to secure territory from various Islamist factions. So, and then he's got hot links there to more information about that, where at some point, given the assumptions of the American Empire, something's got to be done. And in Iraq, much more, they take Iraq much more seriously than Libya. But I think eventually, unless the dollar breaks first, given the assumptions of the empire, if not Obama, I think probably Obama, but if not him, Hillary, or whoever's next, will end up sending some kind of full-scale force into Libya, as well as will already be in Iraq and Syria by then. And the thing is this, Obama knows better, right? Like Peter Van Buren said, he knows that Al-Qaeda went from zero presence in Iraq to times a zillion, I mean, one times a zillion, presence in Iraq after Zarqawi came down from autonomous, protected northern Kurdistan after Saddam's fall or overthrow. Obama knows, he may not have read Pape, but he knows of him, and Obama knows that all he can do is blow this thing up and make matters worse, and yet, what else are you going to do? This is the logic of the bureaucracy. It's just like Leon Panetta told David Gregory on MSNBC when they were talking about Yemen, and David Gregory says, Jesus, starting to sink through even my thick skull that, like, what if maybe we're making more enemies in Yemen with our drone strikes than we're actually killing? And Leon Panetta said, and he really meant it, because he's a bureaucrat, and that's how he thinks. He said, David, these are the tools we have, and we have to use them. What are we going to do? Not use them? And so it just doesn't matter whether he's making more and more Al-Qaeda guys every time he kills one. It's just, I can't stop, David, he cried. That's just how it works. And so no wonder we're going back to Iraq, and no wonder it'll be a real occupation again. And I won't be surprised at all, and you don't be surprised at all, if they end up invading Libya to shore up the government of General Haftar here. Just like in my prediction, only later. I think in Iraq it'll be much sooner, unfortunately. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here. Coming up this October 18th at Columbia University in New York, the Future Freedom Foundation is hosting a conference titled Stop the Wars on Drugs and Terrorism, featuring Glenn Greenwald, Radley Balco, Jeremy Scahill, Eugene Jarecki, Jonathan Turley, and others. The event is free and open to the public, but registration is required. Just head over to fff.org to sign up. That's the Stop the Wars on Drugs and Terrorism Conference, Saturday, October 18th, 2014, at Columbia University, sponsored by the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Tomorrow, Marjorie Cohn is going to be on the show from the Thomas Jefferson School of Law to talk about, well, the legalities of, well, like we talked a little bit with Peter Van Buren about the legalities of the president taking us into this new Iraq war. And I want to talk with her about the, you know, so-called international law, too, which, you know, I'm very skeptical of anyway, but yeah, it's interesting. All right, now, so, I don't know. I guess I want to talk about, Ukraine for a minute here, just to get it out of the way. We'll talk about Ukraine later. Third hour Ukraine. Here from The Age, which is, Australia. Turkey has supported Al-Qaeda's wing in Syria in defiance of America, the former ambassador has disclosed. And now, remember when Seymour Hersh came out with his expose, the red line and the rat line, about how the chemical attack in Syria last year was probably a false flag attack by the al-Nusra Front, in order to try to blame it on Assad and get America to intervene in the war on their side, which almost worked. But then at the last minute, Putin came and saved Obama by saying, how about we just get rid of all the chemical weapons and then you don't bomb them? And then he agreed to that. So cool. All right. Anyway, in that story, he talked about how, yeah, they got the sarin from Turkey. And how the Turks have been, Erdogan favors al-Nusra above all the other groups fighting in Syria. And those are the guys who were sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York. Turkey has directly supported al-Qaeda's wing in Syria in defiance of America. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't believe that. You got to prove it to me. The former U.S. ambassador has claimed the Turkish authorities thought they could work with extremist Islamist groups in the Syrian civil war and at the same time push them to become more moderate. Francis Ricardone, who was until late June the U.S. ambassador to Ankara, told journalists in a briefing that led them to work with Jabhat al-Nusra, an al-Qaeda offshoot, as well as hardline Salafi Islamist groups such as Ahrar al-Sham, which those are the guys who are primarily financed by the Saudis, according to Mitchell Prothro, who I think you can pretty much take his word to the bank on stuff like that. Ricardione, whatever the hell you say this guy's name, said he tried to persuade the Turks to close their borders to al-Nusra, but to no avail. And by the way, when they say al-Qaeda offshoot, Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS only split apart a little more than a year ago. Before that, it was just al-Nusra, which was just the new name for al-Qaeda in Iraq, the group that rose up after the invasion to help the local Sunnis resist the American and Iranian-backed efforts in Baghdad and... of course, you know, to try to really change the system of, you know, they really originally declared their Islamic State again back in 2006. They tried to. But anyway, so that's who they are. And then the only reason that ISIS split off from Nusra was because al-Nusra was more Syrian veterans of al-Qaeda in Iraq. And ISIS was more Iraqi veterans of al-Qaeda in Iraq, and Baghdadi, and I forget the name of the guy who supposedly was the head of Nusra at the time, they had a personal conflict as to who was supposed to take orders from who. And then Zawahiri chimed in from, you know, by podcast from Pakistan and said that Baghdadi ought to go back to Iraq, to which Baghdadi responded, "What's Iraq?" and mocked Zawahiri for, you know, playing into Western colonialism and the recognition of these old state borders. And at that point, split off completely from Nusra and renamed his group the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. That was last April. That was last April. But before that, it was all just one group. It's still just al-Qaeda in Iraq. That's who these guys are. They're the worst suicide bomber, prisoner beheader, lunatics of the Sunni-based insurgency that fought the American occupation. And so, anyway, just to make sure everybody's on the same page here and all that, we ultimately had no choice but to agree to disagree. Oh, really? No, America has no leverage over Turkey at all, huh? NATO members completely on the dole for, you know, outright cash and weapons and training and security guarantees from here to whenever, next week. The Turks, frankly, worked with groups for a period. This is a quote of this State Department guy again. The Turks, frankly, worked with groups for a period, including al-Nusra, whom we finally designated as being groups we're not willing to work with. Turkey allowed its borders to be used as a conduit for aid, weapons, and volunteers heading to support Syrian rebels from the start of the uprising, and there have long been accusations that it did not do enough to distinguish between moderate groups and extremists. This is crazy. The only reason anybody can even complain that at all is because the CIA hired the Turks to vet these guys for us. But a moderate is just a guy who goes, "Oh, yeah, moderation. Yeah, I believe in moderation. Thanks for the weapons." And then turns around and gives them to a bunch of extremists who actually use them in battle. It's an insurgency of 100% volunteers. The ones who fight are the ones who don't mind dying. The ones who really believe. Not moderates. Moderates sit back at the warehouse on the Turkish side of the line. Or in a 5-star hotel in Qatar. I love how they talk about this, like, this is all just the government of Turkey's will without any input from the U.S. all the time, at all, the whole time. And then when America did have anything to say about it, well, geez, we just had no choice but to agree to disagree. Right? Somehow, each and every one of you who's been listening to this show over the last 3 years has known that Obama and his policy was helping strengthen jihadist groups, arm and finance jihadist groups fighting Assad in Syria. They're only just finding out now. Oh, Turkey, we try to get you to differentiate between the moderate suicide bomber prisoner beheaders and the extremist ones. And we are just so upset at you for not doing a good enough job differentiating for us. Here's some more money and weapons to give them. This is the first time, according to The Age here, a senior American official, albeit one no longer in service, has said openly that Turkey was working with al-Qaeda. Ironically, the Turkish policy has been effective in one way. Jabhat al-Nusra is now seen as relatively moderate compared with its splinter group, the Islamic State, but in other respects, it has backfired. They're sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri. They cut their prisoners' heads off. They do suicide attacks against civilians. But what? They don't do crucifixions? Is that it? They're loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri. But no, they're relatively moderate. Oh yeah? Is that like Barack Obama is relatively moderate compared to George W. Bush? Relatively moderate. In other respects, it has backfired. Obama repeatedly stalled on providing more support to the rebel cause, fearing weapons would fall into the hands of extremists. Yeah, really. Islamic State split from al-Nusra last summer, taking thousands of recruits and their weapons and territory, etc., etc. There you go. And it's been America Saudi, Turkey, and Qatar working together this whole time to do it. And now the Americans throwing their Turkish allies under the bus, trying to blame it all on them. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, y'all. I'm me. It's my show. Thanks for listening. And, all right, well, so, yeah, let's talk about more about the war on ISIS, huh? From today, report U.S. provides ISIS intelligence to Syria. Ruling out coordination, U.S. is still funneling info to Assad. And this is from Haaretz. Of course, Patrick Coburn first wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, I think, a week and a half ago or so. That Obama was sending Assad intelligence on ISIS through Germany. As it says here. And let's see. Jason links to another one by him. Is he linking to Cobra in there? What's this? Maybe there was another report too. I'll get as many footnotes as I can. This one is in the International Business Times. U.S. gives intelligence to Assad for targeting ISIS commanders. Reports claim the U.S. has been secretly passing on locations of ISIS forces to Assad's regime. And, oh yeah, see, he's citing The Independent, Patrick Coburn. There you go. So, yeah. Patrick Coburn says so. I'm with it. But, so, now here's one more thing before I start saying stuff. Obama, Assad, quote, protected Christians in Syria. And this is from English.alakbar.com. And so here's what it says. This is from September 12th. U.S. President Barack Obama surprised his visitors, the delegation of Eastern Christian patriarchs, on Thursday when he told them that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, quote, protected the Christians in Syria. Which is, of course, true. Obama met, I mean, they might hate him on a regular day, but not when he's all that's standing between them and al-Nusra and ISIS. And Ahrar al-Sham, for that matter, the FSA. Obama met with the delegation in the White House for 35 minutes, during which the patriarchs presented a paper in which they exposed the situation of Christians in the Middle East and the threats and challenges they're facing, due in part to the expansion of the Islamic State. Sources told al-Akbar that the highlight of the meeting was when Obama said the following phrase, quote, "We know that President Bashar al-Assad protected Christians in Syria." Obama then used the term the Syrian government instead of regime, which is usually used by the U.S. to describe the government in Syria. The confused attendees could not believe what they heard. However, one of the guests addressed Obama and said, "Then you should stop talking about a moderate Syrian opposition." Which, I love how no one respects this guy at all, right? They don't even say, "Mr. President." So I was like, "Oh yeah, well then you, my equal or less, better listen." What's to respect? Obama spoke about the planned U.S. airstrikes in Syria, claiming that they will help, quote, facilitate the Syrian political process. Huh? The U.S. president then reiterated his country's, quote, support for the Lebanese army, explained that the weaponry the U.S. gave the Lebanese army is the best response to ISIS in Lebanon, which, of course, that's really not true. Not that I'm saying I'm for it. I'm for non-intervention altogether, but just as a statement of fact. The best way to stop ISIS in Lebanon is to arm Hezbollah. That's ISIS's most powerful and most natural enemy in Lebanon. And, you know, the Lebanese army, what do they ever do except sit in their barracks, man? When Israel attacked in 2006, they didn't do a thing. So, Anyway, but I guess, you know, that's still good for Raytheon and whatever. So, guys, what do you think? Obviously, it's a very confused policy. Obama has been committing high treason for 3 years, and the entire consensus in D.C. has been for it. That's what they all think, including even, as I was saying this morning, McCain is saying to Dempsey, hey, when we're back in the FSA over there and Assad attacks them, are you going to hit Assad or are you going to let him attack them? McCain is still on the side of the Mujahideen against Assad. And he's demanding the same from the president and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Guilty of high treason. And no, the FSA did not do 9/11. However, it is not a stretch. It is just absolute simple that America's policy has been to provoke the entire rebellion in Syria, which has all along included the very worst of the Al-Qaeda in Iraq veterans. You can go back and find the American government officials admitting it in 2011 and 2012 when the thing is just getting started. That, yes, well, no, al-Nusra really is just Al-Qaeda in Iraq. We're putting them on the terrorist list. It's just a new name for Al-Qaeda in Iraq, only now they're in Syria. They've known that, and we've known that, and talked about on the show how those guys have been the supermajority of the rebellion in Syria for 3 years straight. We've covered it the whole time. This is their rebellion, always has been. For Obama and McCain and the rest of the government's policy to support anyone other than the government of Syria is treason. I'm not saying that to not support anyone is treason. I'm saying to support anyone but the government of Bashar al-Assad in this civil war is treason. I mean, these guys, up until a year ago, they were all had declared their loyalty to Al-Qaeda, including the so-called Islamic Front, and especially including ISIS, al-Nusra. And then when ISIS has broken off, I guess you can no longer, you know, directly connect them to, you know, the Al-Qaeda enemy in that sense. So maybe it's not, you know, legally, technically, capital H, capital T, high treason for Obama to continue to support the rebellion in Syria since ISIS broke from al-Nusra. But at least as long as he was supporting it and it included al-Nusra, he's guilty of high treason, and so is a whole damn mess of them. Anyway, that's a long way of saying, how in the hell can they turn this story around? Now they've got to realign with Assad and the Baathist secularist government against the Sunni-based insurgency. Against, if not the FSA, if they're going to carve them out a little place for them to live or something, I don't know. But otherwise, the only force on the ground in Syria that any person with any relationship to reality knows can fight ISIS and defeat them, it's the army of Syria, of the government, the state of Syria. I mean, they might burn themselves out if there was non-intervention over a little bit longer term, but as far as who can get rid of them, it would be the Syrian army. It's their country, kind of. I mean, sort of not, but yeah. Anyway, for them to reestablish their monopoly on power is within the realm of possibility if America was supporting them. Or at least maybe if America would just stay the hell out of it. But they're so stuck on this get rid of Assad because that's what Israel wants from 3 years ago policy, even though the rebellion has metastasized into the absolute, you know, nightmare of, you know, a clone of bin Laden declaring an actual, real Islamo-fascist caliphate that used to be a fiction of right-wing war propaganda from 10 years ago in the place of where Western Iraq and Eastern Syria used to be. They still can't knock it off. They still can't admit that they're just helping the enemy. And so that goes for McCain anyway, but now here's Obama talking about, you know, Assad. So does that mean he's trying to turn the ship of state around, but is just slow going? I don't know what the hell they think they're going to do. And they don't have permission because I guess probably the Russians are telling Assad that, hey, don't let the Americans bomb unless, you know, they come to us with hat in hand and willing to negotiate on our terms. Don't let them bomb inside your country, even if they're bombing ISIS. I don't know if the Russians told him that or not. Maybe he's just playing his own hardball. But I do think it's quite likely. I think it's 99% likely that Coburn is right, that Obama probably is giving us Assad intelligence for use against ISIS. But boy, what if McCain gets a hold of that? Does right-wing politics know that yet? And what are they going to say about that? That he shouldn't do that? He shouldn't help Assad kill ISIS? Anyway, all the moderates have declared non-aggression, at least, with ISIS for now. Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Oh, man. I was trying to take U2 off of my phone. They put U2 on my phone without asking. Oh, I could kill a man. Are you kidding me? I didn't have to hear any of it yet, but I could have accidentally have heard it. Oh, my God. Don't like having my property rights violated. And I hate you two. I hate them more than I hate anyone or anything. Hate. And then the break, I didn't realize what had happened until like 2 minutes after. So I'm scrambling here, but then I forgot my Apple ID. Now I got to make up a new one. I got to have it send me a thing to reset my password. Oh, man. God dang. That means you two is going to still be on my phone for at least another 10 minutes. Not that I'll have to hear it, I don't think. But that is not okay. You two. Is that even still a band? Where the streets have no... Oh, I'm sorry. I'd kill myself if I don't kill Apple first. Play some Poison Idea. Wash that crap right out of my ear hole, man. Alright, no, I can't play Poison Idea. I want to, but... Alright. Ukraine, is this real? What is this? I don't know if I can believe this. What source is this? Let me see if I can find this quote somewhere else before I tell you it's true. Because I don't know. That's crazy. Oh, no. It's all over the place anyway. Are they all quoting one source? I don't think so. Ukrainian government. Where the hell? Oh. Ukraine threatens to restart nuclear weapons program. The Ukraine defense minister said on Sunday that his country will restart its own nuclear program if it does not receive satisfactory military support against what he alleged to be a nuclear threat from Russia. Someone tell Victoria Nuland to send her Nazis back to Kiev right now. Jesus. Speaking at a press conference, he added, if we fail to defend Ukraine today, if the world does not help us, we will have to get back to the creation of such weapons, which will defend us from Russia. The minister stressed his country seeks military support from NATO, the US, and the UK in particular. Yeah. Hey, did you guys ever hear the one about how actions have consequences? Is this alone? Just the statement here. Not proof that it was the wrong policy to overthrow the government in Kiev. you know, Yanukovych was a corrupt president, but all presidents are corrupt. But he wasn't this bad. And he'd won an election, which, you know, I'm a libertarian, and that doesn't really mean much to me, but it's certainly a more legitimate way of holding power than a military, or not really military, but a brown shirt, SA-type coup d'etat, which is what happened on February the 21st. And now these guys lost in the East. Another headline here, this is from antiwar.com. Ukraine offers special status for the East in order to finally, you know, end the war. They have a ceasefire now, but they're trying to solidify it, thank goodness. And that's because it didn't work. And they tried two or three times, and their big offensive failed. And they can blame it on Russian special forces helping, which is probably true. But anyway, so now what are they going to do? I guess they can wait and try to regroup and go back to war later. But apparently they're in the position now of the Poroshenko government of now going ahead and making concessions. Declaring a 3-year special status for Donetsk and Luhansk. The special status would grant the region increased autonomy, amnesty for the rebels, the right to use Russian as an official language, and the right to form local police forces independent of the national government. So, on one hand, it sounds like they recognize defeat. Their anti-terrorist campaign failed. And so, you know, I guess it's just politics, right? If we have to concede defeat in the East, let's go ahead and threaten to start making atom bombs. Boy, talk about preemptive war. Who thinks that Russia wouldn't invade Ukraine if they had to in order to prevent the Ukrainian government from coming to possess weapons of mass destruction? And actual ones, atom bombs count as actual weapons of mass destruction. Not, you know, a canister of 25-year-old mustard gas. That's already been declared and revealed and put under lock and key by international inspectors. Anyway, so there you go. It's sort of like, oh man, what was I reading? I got to start taking better notes. I used to be the world's greatest genius at remembering where I read everything. Well, maybe not, but pretty damn close. But I was just reading a thing the other day about, was it Coburn? No. Was it Robert Perry? Might have been Robert Perry. It was about how the Saudis, as a compromise, you know, as you may be familiar, the Saudi royalty with their solid gold airplanes and their coke and whores and good times, they have a compromise with the Wahhabi clerics, which is that you can rule everybody else with an iron fist. Just leave us alone. And so that's the compromise they had. And then, man, where was I reading this? It wasn't that thing the Rand Corporation guy wrote, was it? No, I wouldn't have put this much stock in it. But anyway, it was about how, so when the king of Saudi Arabia told bin Laden, no, I'm going to hire George H.W. Bush to kick Saddam out of Kuwait, that enraged the clerics, and so the Saudis made a further compromise with them, that we will double down on exporting Wahhabism and Salafism to Pakistan, whatever. We'll internationalize. And, oh, you know what it was? Let me think. Because it was about, it had a lot about Prince Bandar and it was in relation to the 28 pages. Oh, then I know what it was. It was Lawrence Wright. Lawrence Wright in The New Yorker did a thing about the 28 pages. That at 28pages.org, they're trying to get declassified. See, it was in there somewhere. I just had to babble for a long time. So Lawrence Wright, he's the author of the book on 9/11. Well, there's a lot of them, but it's The Looming Tower, and you ought to read it. It's really good. And anyway, yeah, that's what he's saying is, a big part of all the network of all the terrorism financing was, you know, not like this is the entire answer or anything, but it's just part of the story of where this came from. It was part of the blowback from the first Gulf War that to allow white Christian soldiers to occupy from North America, to come and occupy the Holy Arabian Peninsula. If we're going to do that in order to kick Saddam out of Kuwait, then I'll tell you what, guys. Okay, yes, we'll give you all these billions of dollars to spend, you know, creating little Talibans all over the world. And that's exactly what they set out and did. Just another little part of the story. I'll have to try to remember to work that in when I'm given my each intervention leads to the next one, you know, narrative I like to tell. Yeah, maybe that's coming up on the show. That's an important one. Lawrence Wright, New Yorker, about the 28 pages. All right, neurons, you heard me. Stay working in there so I can remember you later when I need you. And the rest of you, too, you remember that, too. Go look at it. It's a very interesting article. There's been, and Patrick Coburn wrote about, interviewed Bob Graham and wrote about the 28 pages, too, about the Saudis bankroll in 9/11. Interesting stuff there. I'm gonna have the guy on from 28pages.org. Maybe tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. I want to tell you about this great new book, Livin' La Vida Baroka, American Culture in an Age of Imperial Orthodoxies by Thomas Harrington. While he comes from the left, Harrington has little time for much of what is passed off under that label today. Like us libertarians, he puts peace and freedom first. The book's got great essays on American fascism, empire, the Israeli occupation, the left and Obama, liberalism in the state, and some interesting lessons from the history of Imperial Spain. Livin' La Vida Baroka by Thomas Harrington. Check it out at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon. All right, y'all. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm trying to get this damn YouTube album off of my phone. How dare they put a YouTube album on my phone? I'm never using any Apple products ever again for this. You bastard. How about offer a free album of your choice? Not YouTube, which, news to you, everybody who doesn't like YouTube, which is most everybody, hates them because they suck. The hell, man? How in the world are you going to put a U2 album on somebody's phone without asking? It's like, I feel like I've been raped. It's absolutely horrifying. Sorry. I just, god dang, man. All right. Sign in here. Please work. Oh, you bastard. I can't do it right. I hate it. I'm... Yeah. You guys suck so bad. Oh, what is this now? All right. I'm officially now anti-sponsored by Apple. Hey, y'all. Scott here for Apple Sucking. Don't you hate all their crap about your Apple ID and how difficult it is to reset your password and all this crap when you're doing a live radio show and they put U2 on your phone without asking? That's why you should switch to Macintosh, or Windows products, or, you know, Linux or something like that. Jelly Bean, that's not Apple, is it? Switch to something else other than Apple. Why, they are pure evil. In fact, Apple is a front for the CIA and the FSB and the gays, or I don't know, whoever you're most afraid of. They're the ones who secretly control Apple. I can't believe that they put you two on my phone. I'm sorry, this is the worst segment of radio I've ever done. Except for yesterday's first segment. All right. I tried and I failed. And I had something good to say, but now I ruined the whole beginning, first few minutes of this segment with my Apple rant, and now I won't have enough time to say the good thing, or that I was going to at least try to say. So instead, I guess I'll complain about police state stuff more. This one apparently is new. Autopsy report says all shots were in the back of man gunned down for, quote, attacking police. The quote, those stupid cops thought they had to murder over a toy. This is my baby, my family, and they ruined my family. That's the mother of the deceased. Darian Hunt, 22. This is at thefreethoughtproject.com. Follow them on Facebook if you dare. Darian Hunt, 22, was gunned down by Utah's Saratoga Springs police on Wednesday for allegedly lunging at police officers with a sword. Oh my God! He came at them with a sword? Well, that's what happens. Haven't you ever seen Raiders of the Lost Ark? Except that problem is the sword was a toy. Witness accounts entirely contradict the official story. And a new independent autopsy conducted at the request of the family has shown that all bullets entered him from behind. In his back. This is consistent with statements made by witnesses on the scene who report that Darian was shot to death while running away from police. It would appear difficult, if not impossible, to reconcile these facts with the story that Darian was lunging toward the officers when he was shot, Randall Edwards, an attorney for the family, stated in a press release. And you know what the cops are all thinking? Lesson learned. Kill all the witnesses, too. The young man was outside a convenience store with his souvenir sword. His souvenir sword in a holder on his back. When, say it with me now as you ladies pull your black veil over your face here. Police were called over a suspicious person. When the officers made contact with Mr. Hunt, he brandished the sword and lunged towards officers with the sword, at which time Mr. Hunt was shot. There is currently no indication that race played any role in the confrontation between Mr. Hunt and the police officers. After all, if the cop didn't yell the N-word as he killed them, then what are you going to do? Go back in time with your mind-reading time traveling machine? Kind of hard to lunge at somebody with your back to him, though, isn't it? His mother says, she's adamant. She's white. The father is black, it says here. And she is adamant. And see, isn't that funny? That it's important to throw that in, right? Because if it's just a black mother complaining this, then, oh, huh. But it's a white mother of a black boy. And she says, I'm in Saratoga Springs because it's a safe little community. And they killed him. They killed my son, the cops, the ones who were supposed to keep it safe. They killed my son because he's black, she said. No white boy with a little sword would they shoot while he's running away. An emotional Susan Hunt told the Deseret News on Friday. Of course, that's right, isn't it? Probably, although I don't know. We're all black people now. In the eyes of the law, as they call it. And this is hilarious too, is that the police on their Facebook page have taken out attacking all the media. Oh yeah, what other people think is a bunch of crap. Real facts are determined by independent investigations, meaning the local DA and the grand jury that work with these very same cops. These murderer cops, day in and day out, every day. Oh no, what they say is a fact. Everything else is spin and a lie. These shameless murderers claim. These guilty murderers. Autopsy reports provide us with facts. One fact is that Hunt was shot repeatedly in the back. The police statement reporting he was lunging at the officers when he was shot. Don't hold up. who's reporting the facts. Hunt described her son as a boy in a man's body who loved everybody and was deeply concerned about travesties in other parts of the world, particularly Africa, the Deseret News reported. So, just some innocent kid, not a criminal. And now, what about the person who called 911? How are they doing today? Just fine? Just fine, right? Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Wow, cool, man. Check out, someone just tweeted to me. In case you've not seen, from military prison, Chelsea Manning offers punditry on ISIS in Iraq. All right, man. What's this about? Oh, a new piece in The Guardian. How to make ISIS fall on its own sword. Degrade and destroy? The West should try to disrupt the canny militants into self-destruction, because bombs will only backfire, writes Chelsea Manning from Fort Leavenworth. Well, you know what? I don't really care what she says in here exactly. All due respect, I'm reading it. She's earned that. I might start yelling, spitting if it's something I don't like, but that's all right. The Islamic State is without question a very brutal extremist group with origins in the insurgency of the U.S. occupation of Iraq. It has rapidly ascended to global attention by taking control of swaths of territory in western and northern Iraq, including Mosul and other major cities. Based on my experience as an all-source analyst in Iraq during the organization's relative infancy, ISIS cannot be defeated by bombs and bullets, even as the fight is taken to Syria, even if it is conducted by non-Western forces with air support. I believe that ISIS is fueled precisely by the operational and tactical successes of European and American military force that would be and have been used to defeat them. I believe that ISIS strategically feeds off the mistakes and vulnerabilities of the very democratic Western states they decry. The Islamic State's center of gravity is, in many ways, the United States, the United Kingdom, and those allied with them in the region. When it comes to regional insurgency with global implications, ISIS leaders are canny strategists. It's clear to me they have a solid and complete understanding of the strengths and, more importantly, the weaknesses of the West. They know how we tick in America and Europe, and they know what pushes us toward intervention and overreach. This understanding is particularly clear considering the Islamic State's astonishing successes in recruiting numbers of Americans, Britons, Belgians, Danes, and other Europeans in their call to arms. Attacking ISIS directly by airstrikes or special operations forces is a very tempting option available to policymakers with immediate but not always good results. Unfortunately, when the West fights fire with fire, we feed into a cycle of outrage, recruitment, organizing, and even more fighting that goes back decades. This is exactly what happened in Iraq during the height of the Civil War in 2006 and 2007, and it can only be expected to occur again. Man, isn't this great so far? Chelsea Manning writing for military prison, everybody. The American hero, Chelsea Manning. And avoiding direct action with ISIS can be successful. For instance, in 2009 and 2010, forerunners to the ISIS group attacked civilians in suicide and car bombings in downtown Baghdad to try to provoke American intervention and sectarian unrest. They were often not effective in their recruiting efforts when American and Iraqi forces refused or were unable to respond, because the barbarity and brutality of their attacks worked against them. When we did respond, however, the attacks were sold to the Sunni minority in Iraq as a justified response to an occupation government favoring the Shia government, an occupying government favoring the Shia government led by former Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. based on my intelligence work in Iraq during that period, Manning continues to write, I believe that only a very focused and consistent strategy of containment can be effective in reducing the growth and effectiveness of ISIS as a threat. And so far, Western states seem to have adopted that strategy. With very public humanitarian disasters, however, like the ones on Mount Sinjar and Erbil in northern Iraq, and the beheadings of the journalists James Foley and Stephen Sotloff, this discipline gets tested and can begin to fray. Pardon me. As a strategy to disrupt the growth of ISIS, I suggest focusing on four arenas, Chelsea Manning continues. 1. Counter the narrative in online ISIS recruitment videos, including professionally made videos and amateur battle selfies, to avoid, as best as possible, the deliberate propaganda targeting of desperate and disaffected youth. This would rapidly prevent the recruitment of regional and Western members. Although I think that'll backfire too. Anyway, sorry. Set clear temporary borders in the region publicly. This would discourage ISIS from taking certain territory where humanitarian crises might be created or humanitarian efforts impeded. Establish an international moratorium. Point 3. Establish an international moratorium on the payment of ransom for hostages and work in the region to prevent ISIS from stealing and taxing historical artifacts and valuable treasures as sources of income, especially from taking over the oil reserves and refineries in Baji, Iraq. This would disrupt and prevent ISIS from maintaining stable and reliable sources of income. And then 4, let ISIS succeed in setting up a failed, quote, state in a contained area over a long enough period of time to prove itself unpopular and unable to govern. This might begin to discredit the leadership and ideology of ISIS for good. Eventually, if they are properly contained, I believe that ISIS will not be able to sustain itself on rapid growth alone and will begin to fracture internally. The organization will begin to disintegrate into several smaller, uncoordinated enemies, ultimately failing in their objective of creating a strong state. But the world just needs to be disciplined enough to let the ISIS fire die out on its own, intervening carefully and avoiding the cyclic trap of mission creep. This is certainly a lot to ask for, but ISIS is wielding a sharp, heavy, and double-edged, double-sword, very deadly. Sorry, I'm reading ahead and tripping on my tongue. But ISIS is wielding a very sharp, heavy, and very deadly double-edged sword. Now just wait for them to fall on it. Great. The only real quibble I have in here is, kind of recycling the discredited crisis on Mount Sinjar, which, you know, locked in Fort Leavenworth. She may just not have had access to that information. And then I don't like the idea of setting borders, because then that leaves people on the wrong side of the lines, especially when it's a sectarian war. Then everybody who's Sunni on the Shia side and vice versa better run for their life, and that can really backfire. So I'm not so sure about that. And as far as the hostages, you know, look at the case where the lady tried to ransom, and where Obama, you know, it's Foley or Sotloff? It's Foley's family, right? That Obama threatened to put them in prison if they tried to ransom their son. I don't think the government has the right to tell people anything like that whatsoever. So I got to disagree with that, too. And cutting them off from oil resources in Baji is important, but, not any more America's responsibility than any of the rest of this. But anyway, so what's that like? Still a 95% great article by Chelsea Manning in The Guardian. How to Make ISIS Fall on Its Own Sword. Profound. Sensical analysis. I dig it. This will be the spotlight tomorrow on antiwar.com. Tomorrow's spotlight, I write to Eric Garris. Yeah, cool, man. Chelsea Manning. Now, if you're not familiar with the whole story there, Chelsea Manning was a specialist in the U.S. Army. Bradley Manning at the time, liberated the State Department cables, as well as the Iraq and Afghan war logs, and some Guantanamo files, too. Those Iraq and Afghan war logs and the State Department cables have served as the basis for at least parts of probably 10,000 news stories since then. She is the greatest American hero of this entire era. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, wrapping up for the day here. Noon to 3 Eastern Time on the Liberty Radio Network every day. And like I was saying at the beginning of the show, Angela Keaton from Antiwar.com and I did a thing at Liberty.me last night. It was sort of a, I guess they call it a seminar or a class or something. Well, it was, she interviewed me, basically, and we talked about the wars and stuff. And a caller asked at the end, well, what's the best way to leave? Not a caller, a chat room participant. Same thing, you know what I mean. Asked, well, what's the best way to leave the Middle East then? And my answer was, just come home. And in fact, now is the perfect time to just stop intervening. Just quit cold turkey, hardcore, close all the bases, end all foreign aid, bring everybody home, and just call it quits. And then, I guess I probably won't do a much better job now than I did last night trying, but I want to try to sum this up in a way where you could see what I mean. Well, you know what? Before I get to the Blame Wilson thing, Rothbard had a great quote, and you hear Ron Paul say this sometimes about inflation and how inflation is like heroin. And it feels really great at the time, but actually you're making yourself sicker the whole time that you're on it. And then so when you come down from it, you come down that much harder, kind of a thing. And to kick can really be a real pain, but only after a real kick, liquidation of bad debts, in other words, in the case of the boom and the bust cycle, and sound money, good nutrition, can you kind of, you know, really make a comeback? And so, of course, in monetary policy, the official doctor's recommendation is more heroin. But real doctors like Dr. Paul know better. Well, it's kind of the same thing with intervention. Every bit of intervention, as Chelsea Manning put it, it can feel good, seem right in the short term to drop bombs on these kooks with black masks, machine gunning innocent civilians just for being Shiites, and kill them dead and all that, even if it actually just makes matters worse. And even if, in effect, actually you're just serving as Iran and their militias, Air Force, and even if you're just going to make everything explode in everybody's face that much worse and create more excuses for shooting up more, sending in more planes and more Marines, as you move forward. It's not a perfect metaphor, but I think you understand what I mean. And here's how I can really make the case, is just by showing you with the actual history. World War I was set to be a stalemate. It was over with no victory. Woodrow Wilson got us into the war proclaiming, we're going to have a peace without victory. Instead of the winners lording it over the losers, from now on after this war, everybody's going to be really fair and friends from now on, he said. And that was why he had to get us into the war, so that he could be a player on the world stage and he could have a say in the peace negotiations. Peace without victory, he said. He's the one who gave the total victory to the British and the French over the Germans, by way of the blockade, mostly. And starving them into submission. And then, the American GIs finally tipped the whole balance, and the Germans surrendered and got all their external territory stripped from them and set the stage for the rise of the Nazis, as all historians on Earth agree. It was blowback from the Treaty of Versailles, which was only possible because of American intervention in the war. And at the same time, Wilson had bribed the revolutionary government, the parliamentary government of Kerensky in Russia, that had taken power in March of 1917, and paid them to stay in the war, which undermined the last little bit of support that they had and helped set the stage for the Bolsheviks and the Soviets to take over. And, of course, the army, the majority of the army, they were still out of town, so not there to protect Kerensky from the coup. And so Lenin and Trotsky were able to seize power and create communism on Earth in the form of the Soviet Union. Read Jim Powell's great book, Wilson's War, about all of this. And so then, well, geez, everybody knows the good war, the greatest war of all, was when America went to clean up the mess America had created. And in this case, allying with the, you know, mathematically much worse, I think you'd have to say much worse Soviet Union, already killed tens of millions of people by the time they even got in a war with the Germans. And they had divided up Poland to start the war, remember. But America allied with the Soviet Union in order to kill the Nazis. Can't really complain about that part too much, of course, except for all the innocent civilians killed and all their terror bombing and all that. But then, so all that happened, though, was the Soviet Union was empowered by America's intervention on their behalf. They ended up conquering half of Europe. And then that became the excuse, and in fact, then they were able to help Mao Zedong in his civil war against Chiang Kai-shek and help the communists come to power, seize power in China, and enslave the Chinese under communism that eventually killed, 40 million of them starving to death, and also spread communism to Southeast Asia, the excuse, first to Korea in East Asia, and then down into Indochina, the excuse for all that containment. And then, of course, also America embarked on an entire Cold War worldwide, divided the world in half, really two-thirds for us, one-third for the USSR and the Chinese bloc. And they overthrew, as one part of it, of course, there's an entire hemisphere of regime change here in Latin America. But, of course, as everyone knows now, right, in 1953, America overthrew the government of Iran because their prime minister, their democratically elected prime minister, leaned a little bit left, and he wasn't even nationalizing Iranian oil. That's a misnomer. He was asking for a slight increase in the percentage they were getting, from 0.0% to a tiny little bit, please, of the profits that the British were simply just stealing all the oil and paying them virtually nothing. And I don't remember the exact percentages, but it was an absolute outrage how badly the people of Iran were being raped on that. And so all they were doing really was pushing, and pushing hard, for a bigger piece of the pie. And so anyway, so America, in the name of anti-communism, overthrew Mossadegh. And then, of course, in the 1970s and 80s, Jimmy Carter backed the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets. At the same time, they were backing Saddam Hussein in his war to contain the blowback from America's coup in Iran, the revolution of 1979 that overthrew the Shah Reza Pahlavi and established the Islamic Republic of Iran under the Ayatollah Khomeini. And so Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan both supported Saddam Hussein in his war against the Iranians. But then he was so broke on his war debts, he owed so much money to Kuwait and Saudi, he needed them to quit flooding the market with oil so bad they could make enough money to even pay them back the money he spent really waging a war for them to contain Iran at the cost of 500,000 Iraqi lives and 500,000 Iranians too. And that's in the Glaspie memos, is what the whole thing at issue is. The Kuwaitis won't even give him the respect of meeting with him. And at the same time that they're that OPEC is keeping the price of a barrel of oil so low he can't pay for a damn thing, They won't even meet with him about it, and they're slant drilling. Not really slant drilling. They're overproducing, according to the agreement, from shared oil reserves under the Iraq-Kuwait border, is really what it was. And that was what he was complaining about. And then April Glaspie told him, well, go ahead and beat the hell out of Kuwait and see if we care. James Baker has instructed me to say to you, go ahead, we don't get involved in inter-Arab disputes. As Greg Palast paraphrased it, go ahead and kneecap them. But they weren't supposed, Saddam wasn't supposed to conquer all of Kuwait. He was just supposed to occupy the northern oil fields and teach him a lesson. He went too far, and then Margaret Thatcher called Bush a woman on TV for not going to war over it. So Bush declared American policy as, we will not negotiate, we're going to war. Basically, surrender's not good enough, we're going to war. So then that pissed off our friend Osama and his buddies left over from that war. And then, am I already out of time? And then they occupied Iraq for the 90s, and that motivated the war of the 90s in 2001 against the United States. And then that became the excuse for all the interventions since. And then on to Libya and Syria, and now back to Iraq again. And so now just quit cold turkey. Just call it quits. You're not making it better.